Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the fourth Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, it must be Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises with Larry Moscat. Larry, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Well.
I haven't seen you for a while.
No,
we took a month off.
We took some time off on the holidays, but we're back at it. We're going to have a great show today.
Oh, there's no doubt. You have a great guest. And this is very important for people, especially in crisis. And I'll let you explain a little bit more, perhaps, for new listeners. How unique your firm is as opposed to other financial planners. I really like it, and I've always said, with your background in psychology, you have the compassion to look beyond the numbers. Very important. People want that.
Have to do it, Dave. If we're going to do the best job for our clients, sometimes we've got to navigate crises, and that's not always a straight line, and it's not always as straightforward as some of the hard, cold money matters can be viewed. We try to bring some heart to our business.
Very, very important, with a great experience as well. So let's see here. You got a special guest in
very
studio
special
today.
Guest. Yes. So why don't we get going? I'll go ahead and introduce
you.
Dave, I really feel honored, and I'm so pleased to be able to have with us a gentleman by the name of Keith Lyman. Keith Lyman is an attorney. He is a partner with the law firm of Fraser, Ryan, Goldberg, and Arnold, and he's been there since 2008. Keith is an estate planning specialist type of attorney, Dave, and his practice is focused on estate planning and long-term care planning. And we're gonna spend some time defining some of these terms. So if you're a listener and you're hearing estate planning, we're gonna bring some definitions to these. But we're going to spend some time and talk about Medicaid eligibility. That's a very much talked about topic these days. A lot of people, unfortunately, are having to explore this avenue to see if it's a viable option for them. We're going to also discuss asset protection, how to protect our money, maybe not with an eye so much to grow it, but certainly with an eye towards preventing it from being ravaged by a number of the things we're going to talk about today. But Keith Lyman was a graduate of Washburn University of Law. He graduated in 1977, licensed to practice both here in our state of Arizona as well as Kansas and Indiana. excuse me. Keith is a member of the Arizona Bar and the National Association of Elder Law Attorneys. And elder law is going to be one of the areas we're going to develop and discuss and define and bring some good information for listeners today.
And very important with the baby boomer generation moving on every second. They're
absolutely
getting older.
Absolutely. Not only is Keith an excellent and much respected attorney, he's also an accomplished author. Keith has written the book "Teach Yourself Estate Planning in 24 Hours." That sounds like a very — I've not read the book, but that's pretty interesting. That's a very very big topic and very complex. And much like I'm sure he'll do today, he's distilled it down to some very readable and digestible pieces of information. He's also written The Strategy of Long-Term Care, How Middle and Upper Middle Class Americans Can Qualify for Medicaid. In addition, and I love the title of this book, and it's another one I would like to read too, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Wills and Trusts. I love the title of that. Maybe we'll have a chance to find out what complete idiots are learning in this very excellent book. He's also written yet another book, Personal Financial Planning Guide. Keith has been a national speaker for Professional Education Systems, the National Business Institute, and has conducted a lot of legal education programs here throughout the county. Keith, thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Great. We've got an awful lot to cover, and it's a matter of just figuring out where we're going to begin. And I think what I'm going to do, Dave, is kind of steer us towards defining what it is we're here to talk about and what we want our listeners to gain from listening to this show. Estate planning, well, in doing my research, I see that there it is generally considered that there are three basic areas for what is referred to as elder law. It includes estate planning and administration. It includes Medicaid, disability, long-term care issues. And it also includes guardianship and conservatorship and even commitment matters and matters involving fiduciary administration. And as I went on, I was actually surprised to realize how incredibly broad this topic is, because not only does it include estate planning, wills, trusts, guardianship, but it also includes some very disturbing but very interesting topics that address elder abuse, elder neglect, fraud, end-of-life planning, even retirement planning, the benefit structure, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, medical directives, powers of attorney, on and on and on. It's a very broad topic. So I want everybody who's listening to stay tuned, because Keith Lyman is going to show us around these areas and tell us the things that that we really need to know some things about. And
especially the abuse. I you know, and that I shouldn't say especially, but. I bet it's more common than people know. I had a firsthand experience of a client, and maybe I'll share it later when we get to that topic. Mm-hmm. That it's very scary, and if you have elderly parents right now or yeah. know anyone, be on the guard, because there are a lot of people out there that that can take advantage, and unfortunately will take advantage.
Yes, and I have to tell you something, in my own business experience, it's not all that hard to do. It would not be that hard to do. I have had, not too long ago, just a 30-second example, I had an elderly client receive an insurance settlement and received $150,000, had been a client of mine for many years. And one day I'm going through my mail, and I see it's from him because I recognize the writing and the address and so on. And long and the short of it is, I open up this envelope, and inside, pay to the order of Larry Mosk at $150,000, and it says, what? Yes, and it says, Larry, I know you'll know where to put this. Just put it in a good place for me. And I'm thinking, wow. That's about as big a no-no as you, even if I were to cash that check and give him the money back. You cannot do that. You cannot do that as an advisor. So I called him. I immediately thanked him for his trust and his confidence. And I said, we have two choices. I can send you the check back, or I can destroy it and send you evidence of the destruction.
Yes.
Of it. And he's, well, whatever. But I've had a number of elderly clients, and unfortunately, it just isn't that hard to take advantage. So it's great if we have family members who are stewards of their family yeah. fortunes and monies and take good care of their elders.
And I'm sure, Keith, you have seen this probably throughout your career.
Yeah, there's unfortunately too much of that going around, and you see it. You wonder about the times that you don't see it, which is really scary. But, the whole background, how I got into this elder law issue is sort of tied into what you're talking about. It is beginning my practice years and years ago as an estate planner was basically to prepare wills and trusts and power of attorneys, health care, typical estate planning type of things. And through the years, after doing that for a while, I realized that a lot of the clients, obviously they're getting older, and we also started dealing with people with disabilities. And so we started to realize that a lot of the traditional estate planning wasn't addressing the issue of the disabled. Mm. And there are certain things that are that should be put into estate planning documents when there is an issue of disability or a potential for disability, or you don't even know when that's going to happen. So having backup plans for that. So through the years, I've evolved my practice so that I can recognize the need for putting protections into documents, because when someone's acting on another's behalf, then that's when you really run into a lot of trouble. So we do see a lot of that.
And I have some questions along those lines. Yeah. So very interesting hypothetical questions that I'll bet have been realized inside of your practice. Keith, in the way of beginning, I work closely with attorneys such as yourself and have been doing this a very long time. And I use, much like you use, all three of us use in our business, the term estate planning. But I have it's not just a suspicion, it's actual feedback from clients, from people at the proverbial cocktail party when you're talking about what you do. That term estate planning, I think in the mind of many just average consumers, the term estate planning means fancy stuff of a legal nature for rich people.
That's right.
And I wonder if you would take just a moment and really define what estate planning means to your basic average consumer. What is it, and what things need to be done with estate planning?
Well, let me give you a little bit of a history on that. When I first started doing estate planning many years back, that was around the time when a lot of promoters were encouraging living trusts. And when I would talk about the advantage of using trusts, almost every person would say, well, I am not that wealthy. Mm-hmm. I don't need a living trust. Mm-hmm. Or I don't. The other comment would be, I can take care of my own money. I don't need a bank. And I'd never mentioned bank or a financial institution or anything like that. So there was a really embedded belief that estate planning was for the wealthy, and the average middle-class person didn't need it and wouldn't even look at it. So there's been a lot of education, which has been really good. There have been books, publications, talks, presentations, et cetera, to educate the public that estate planning techniques are valuable for anyone, not just the wealthy. So when we do estate planning, we look to not only the wealth of the individual or the family, but we also look to what their goals are in terms of passing their assets, their inheritance on to others. And it's that process where the elder law part of it comes in, because we're not looking just at the elders that we are planning for. We are also planning for the families of elders. And elders doesn't necessarily mean incapacitated mm-hmm. elders. It just means those who are at a stage in their life where they are wanting to think about passing on their estate. So looking at that process of passing on the estate, we have to look at the needs of the individual client and the needs of the beneficiary. Now, in typical estate planning, the focus in terms of educating an attorney for estate planning is often on taxes. You know, estate planning is extremely valuable for wealthy who are facing a federal estate tax issue, and it's extremely important for them. But it's also important for those who have no tax issue at all, but they have other issues. Issues such as an autistic child who they want to receive their inheritance, but they don't want that child to be able to spend the money in an inappropriate manner. They might have a seriously mentally ill child. In addition, looking at the other side of the coin, you're looking at the elderly, and as they get older, there's a strong need to focus on lifetime planning. So the other component of estate planning is focusing, first of all, on what we call death planning, but also focusing on lifetime planning, planning for the elderly individual. And it doesn't necessarily mean age. In other words, elderly obviously means age, but also any individual who may be suffering from a disability, and planning to protect that person or that couple's assets while they're alive. So the focus in my practice and in a lot of elder law is not tax planning, And it's not necessarily death planning or avoiding probate, but it's planning to manage property for the individuals while they're alive.
Okay.
That can include making sure that assets are protected and preserved to pay their way if they need assistance in the home, if they develop an illness that requires more custodial care, if they need to move out of the home into assisted living or other kind of structured environment, then you need more money to handle those needs. So making sure the planning that you do covers those needs, not just taxes and not just avoiding probate.
Okay. So regular stuff for regular people.
Yeah.
Right. Really,
and the heirs, right? Like you said, someone that has an autistic child, I guess issues such as who would care for them when the parents are gone. Is that something?
That's right.
That's very important. I mean,
it is.
You know, we have a show called Understanding Autism, and the spectrum is very large. Some people are capable and functional, and some on the spectrum are not, and the parents are very worried about that.
Right.
What's going to happen to my child that I have protected all my life when I'm gone?
Right.
That's big.
Right. And again, like you're pointing out, the focus isn't on the money.
Right.
It's not the wealth that's the issue. The issue is caring for someone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And how do you create a document that cares for people?
Yeah.
And that's what elder law is all about.
Yeah, I the care is certainly important, and the methods that care will be paid for is also a very much a part of that. Keith, you before we go to break here in just a few minutes, you touched on something that I know is very central to elder law. I run into it into my business, but it's right in the crosshairs of your business, and it has to do with having a meeting, setting a meeting with two generations, an elder and perhaps an adult son, an adult daughter, and they come into your office, Keith, and maybe this adult son or daughter expresses concerns, maybe even suspicions of observing increasing confusion, or maybe some unusual behaviors on the part of, let's assume it's a parent, their parent in this case. What sorts of things might be looked at along these lines? But also, I think it's an interesting question because that very situation is almost the poster child for conflict of interest. And the question is, if you have an adult son and daughter there with their parent, and let's say these are the only beneficiaries of the parent's estate, they might have mixed feelings about what might happen to mom or dad, what that might cost, and what it might mean to them. How do you, as an elder law attorney and estate planner, manage those conflicts of interest? Where do you go with that? How do you address that with clients? And how do you resolve that successfully?
That's probably the biggest issue, you know, that faces an elder law practitioner is the question of not only capacity, but who's the client?
Mm-hmm. Who is the client?
And that's a huge issue. Obviously, you know, the question is, what is it you're being asked to do? And for whom, who's mm-hmm. going to benefit, put it that way, who's mm-hmm. going to benefit from what you're doing? So let's say you get a call from a son who says, my dad seems to be, you know, forgetful, and he's not able to grasp financial matters like he used to, and we really want to bring him in because we're concerned about the future with him. Obviously, in that scenario, the client is the dad. That'd be the person who you're doing the planning for. So to move forward, you have to speak to the dad, and you have to have the dad in, and you have to be able to talk to the dad.
Alone?
Preferably alone, mm-hmm. ideally, because you don't want to have any outside influence because you don't know the family dynamics. You don't know if the individual who's bringing the person in is doing so as we would hope or whether they have some ulterior motive. So ideally, meeting with the client, in this case the dad, individually, alone, would be the best way to go.
Okay.
But the trick is you have to make sure then that individual has capacity. And obviously, you know, I'm an attorney. I'm not a psychiatrist mm-hmm. or psychologist, so I don't have the skills and the skill set to recognize with any medical certainty that a person has an illness. But we certainly need to look into that.
Okay. Okay, very interesting material. We're visiting here today, Dave, with Keith Lyman, estate planner, elder law attorney, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beerham Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerham Baum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hi, I'm Paul and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And, of course, the fourth Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, it's Larry Moscat and Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises. And, Larry, I'll tell you, your guest is phenomenal.
Very clear
on the estate planning.
And we're gonna talk further. And you know what I'm going to do, Dave? I'm going to invite our listeners to give us a call. We have access to one of the top elder law and estate planning attorneys in the Valley, and it would be foolish if you have a question to not call in. Give us a call here at the station. Pose your question. The price is right. We're here, and we're ready to answer your question. 602-296-3632. I'll say it again. 602-296-3632. Give us a call. Pose your question to attorney Keith Lyman. Estate planning, elder law planning, And we were talking during the break, Dave, about the absence of planning, I suppose you could say.
Exactly.
And I think it would be interesting to discuss and pose to Keith. We're talking about all the right things to do. We were talking in this example about autism. If you have an autistic child and you are planning for that person's care and maintenance for perhaps the rest of their lives, all the different techniques and documents and strategies and benefits you can employ and access. But the question came up, and it's a good one. What if you don't do it? Keith, what if you just don't do it and you end up passing away, or you end up becoming institutionalized yourself, which may have the same practical effect as passing away? What happens to that individual? What happens to their care? What happens to your money?
Well, that's a perfect question. Let me try to answer that as best I can. Best way to answer that is giving a real-life example from many, many years back. Traditional estate plan prepared for a widow, an elderly widow who had, I don't know how many, say three kids. Typical, it was a trust, and it provided that when she passed away that the assets would go to her kids. Very simple, very straightforward, very normal, if you will, type of document. So through the years after the document was prepared, she, of course, aged and eventually passed away. At that point, I realized when speaking to the heirs that one of the three children had a disability, and that one child was on Medicaid. So here was this estate of this elderly mother passing to her three children, one-third going to a disabled individual. Medicaid is a needs-based program, so you cannot have excess resources. And the same with SSI, Supplemental Security Income. And this child was on Medicaid, and by virtue of inheriting that one-third, that child was cut off of government benefits. We were able to avoid that result, but that's the answer to your question, is the person will then inherit or acquire property that will put them over the resource limit for government benefits.
So we've not done the planning. We're, let's say, hypothetically, we're one of the siblings of, you said there were three. One was disabled, there was this inheritance that was perhaps not properly planned for, which had the effect of cutting benefits off to that individual. A question for you, prospectively, came to me while you were discussing that answer. Could those siblings hire an individual like Keith Lyman, and with the idea of intervening in that inheritance and perhaps maybe redirecting it, I won't say stop it, but redirect it into some kind of management arrangement where benefits would not be cut off and yet those funds could somehow still be available to that disabled individual?
There's a possibility that that could happen, but basically once in this case, the mother has passed, very, very difficult to change the terms of that document. Now, if she was alive, it obviously could be amended. If she was alive and unable mentally to do that, her agent could amend it. So there's ways to change a document that's not drawn properly to deal with a disabled beneficiary. But once the mother in this case passes away, it's very difficult to change anything.
Even if there's this pre-existing condition that whether or not the mom had passed away, a concerned family member might have stepped in and applied for a guardian. And I know it would be a conservatorship in that case. You're saying that a strategy like that is very hard to do once the individual has passed away.
Right. Once the person's passed away, one approach that a beneficiary can take is to disinherit, or not disinherit, disclaim the asset. But Medicaid treats that as a transfer or a gift, and that disqualifies the child for up to 5 years.
But another issue, I mean, that's the financial aspect somewhat, but let's say this child could be an adult child, you know, 20, 30, 35, 40 with autism, let's say, or any disability, for example. The appointing someone to care for that child, isn't that an issue too?
Yes, it is.
And I mean, that's got to be big too.
Right.
And if that's not in the planning document, what happens to the child who takes care of the child? I mean, or the adult that has needs to be taken care
of? Well,
that
probably what they'd have to do is petition for guardianship or conservatorship.
Gotcha.
And that's an expensive process. It's time consuming. It requires accountings with the court. All for good reason, but nevertheless, it's a complicated process and an expensive process. Whereas if a person can plan in advance and put the proper language in their document, they can avoid all of those expenses and have something set up to protect that child and preserve their benefits. Mm. One way to do it is with a special needs trust. If you have a special needs trust set up for the child, then the assets that transfer into the special needs trust do not count as resources for the child, for the beneficiary. So say I'm the child and I receive an inheritance into a special needs trust, I may still remain eligible for Medicaid or SSI because those assets, even though they're available to supplement what the government pays for, they can provide a supplement to my lifestyle, they don't count as my resources.
That's very interesting.
But if you inherit the property directly, if let's say I'm the one who inherits the property, I'm on Medicaid, if I don't get rid of those assets without giving them away, if I don't deplete those assets within that month, then I'm going to be over-resourced. I'll be cut off of benefits. So if I'm under the age of 65, a parent, a grandparent, a guardian, or a court can set up a trust, special needs trust for me. And then I can transfer without penalty, I can transfer those assets into that trust and maintain my eligibility for Medicaid.
So, Keith, these special needs trusts that you've mentioned, obviously for someone with special needs to be taken care of, who may at the same time be receiving a government benefit like Medicaid, they must contain in them some sort of limitations on access and what money can be used for and how much can actually be withdrawn. Is that a true?
Yeah, the key to a special needs trust is that the beneficiary cannot demand anything. So if I'm the beneficiary, I can't tell the trustee, you pay me money or you pay for this or you pay for that. It has to be totally within the discretion of that trustee. So now my creditor, which would be Medicaid, for example, cannot demand that the trustee pay money out of that trust because it's a fully discretionary trust.
So what would it be used for, some of these?
Supplemental food, shelter, entertainment. It can be used to supplement. It can be used to purchase a home, for example. A home can be provided, within the trust, and that home will not be counted as a resource. It can be used for entertainment, trips to Disneyland for children that can benefit from that. So clothing allowances, anything that's not already covered by the government benefits program.
And when the child or the adult with a disability passes away, where do those assets go?
Okay.
That's part of the planning.
Perfect.
Too,
yeah, it is. And that's a perfect question, and it ties into the special needs trust. So going back to the example where I'm the beneficiary and I'm disabled, if I receive an inheritance and it's now in my bank account, if I'm under the age of 65, I can put it in a special needs trust. The trick to that is that when I pass away, the state will recover the payments that they've made while I was alive out of that trust before it goes to anybody else. Okay. Now, if you are the parent and you have created a special needs trust for me, and when you pass away, my share went straight into that special needs trust, I get the same benefit from it. But when I pass away, whatever is in that trust, when I'm gone, goes to whoever you choose. The state does not have a claim for that.
Well,
I was going to say too that, that those trusts, those trusts that I set up, first party we call them, are if I'm only I have to be under the age of 65. If I'm over 65, I can use what's called a pooled trust, where the assets are pooled together. It's not limited to those over 65, but it's an available way for someone. I had some clients who were in their 70s, injured in an automobile accident. They received a settlement, and they were also on Medicaid, so that settlement cut them off of their Medicaid benefits. They, however, could not set up that special needs trust because they were over 65. So the only thing they could do was take that money and invest it in a pooled trust. It's just basically it's a charitable trust, such as Plan of Arizona has an excellent program.
And it sort of works the same way?
Mm-hmm. So it does the same thing.
Wow.
Interesting.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Wow.
This is people need to know this.
Now, the pooled trust, part of that upon my passing will go to the charity. Part of it will go to the heirs.
And how do you determine what part goes where?
It depends on the plan that you set up. There are different organizations that have those.
Interesting. Keith, you mentioned recovery after a person who has received, in this example, Medicaid benefits, that the state will initiate a recovery process to get back what was paid out if there are assets to do that with. And I know this applies to long-term care. That's an area I've worked a lot in, long-term care planning, protection planning, and insurance and the like. How predatory is the state? Are they really doing this?
Yes, the state will put a claim in on any trust asset that's set up in a first-party trust. And they will, you know, make sure that they get any benefits that remain in the trust up to the amount that they've paid out. Now, the state can't reap a benefit from it, but they can recover their expenses that are paid. And they do pursue that.
Yes. I have this come up when I'm discussing long-term care protection planning with my clients. I've had this come up many times. In fact, I was thinking about the 30 years of worth of meetings I've had discussing the issue of long-term care, and that falls generally within the scope of what we're discussing now. And I began thinking when the issue of long-term care insurance would come up, the sorts of things that I've heard, and I jotted them down because I've heard them over and over and over. And I'm going to ask you, Keith, if you ever do discuss that method of long-term care protection insurance, I wonder if you hear some of the same things. I have heard the same five things, guys, I tell you, for as long as I've been working in this area. I understand it from a psychological and emotional point of view. It doesn't always make sense in light of statistics. But when I have brought up the notion of insurance, at least in the past, and I'm going to tell you why and how that's different today than it was 10, 15 years ago. But if I brought up long-term care insurance, I would often hear sort of the number one response to that of, it's not going to happen to me. It just isn't going to happen to me. And maybe you've heard that too.
Hear it all the time.
Yeah, I know. Statistically, that says otherwise. People truly are not motivated by statistics. They can be horrendous statistics, and they just sometimes are not motivated by them because the emotions connected with it are very strong. So, okay, it's not going to happen to me. Well, if it does happen to me, Medicare will take care of me. You probably hear that too.
That's the other one.
All
Medicare
the time.
Will cover it.
Medicare will cover it. We talk about that. It's something I discuss. What the nature of Medicare is with clients, what it's designed to do for them, what it's not designed to do for them, and we try to gently dispel that myth that Medicare will cover it. Okay, maybe it can happen, and I understand that Medicare will take care of me. Well, then the obvious answer is I move in with the kids. That's what I'll do. I'll just move in with the kids. I cared for them for many, many decades, and now it's their turn to take care of me. Again, Maybe you hear that in your business.
That's probably the number one one response is is I'll move in with the kids or the kids will move in with me and everything will be rosy.
And it just sounds like it's neatly tied up, simplistically wrapped up in a bow. And again, the reality is if you've ever seen a long-term care situation up close and personal, it is not pretty. What they don't realize they're asking is they don't realize they're asking potentially their son or their daughter to give up their lives, their work lives, their child-rearing lives, their social lives, and take on a job that actually requires some expertise. Do you really want to be the one that's bathing your mom and getting her on and off the toilet? I mean, this is the nitty-gritty of this subject.
And I might add on that the issue of caregiver stress
tremendous.
Is huge because we see it up close and personal on a regular basis. And we always tell our clients who are making, you know, comments like, oh, my family's going to come in, you know, advise them not to look that way.
I do. Two more quick ones here before we take another quick break. Well, if I can't move in with the kids, I'll just artificially impoverish myself and I'll go on Medicaid. Slam dunk, done. And most people don't know about the look back rules. They, you know, the government, say what you will about them, they're not total idiots. They've thought about such a strategy like that. And there are rules against giving assets away and then qualifying for welfare, which is what that is. So, okay, maybe it can happen, and maybe Medicare won't cover me, and maybe I really can't move in with the kids, and I see now there are laws against artificially impoverishing myself. Famous number five reason, I'll take my trusty 45 out to the field somewhere and take care of the situation. And I've heard that over and over and over. Dave, you know what we're saying.
Yeah,
right?
I do. I do.
And again,
gun control. Right.
Well, at that point, you may not even know what a 45 is, and you may not know where the field is or what a field is.
Wasn't that like a malt liquor, a 45?
It was 45. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about long-term care. We're visiting with estate and elder law planning attorney Keith Lyman, and we'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And, of course, this is Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crises, starring Larry Moscat with special guest Keith Lineman, great attorney. This has been really interesting.
Very interesting.
The estate planning, elder law, I mean, very important stuff, not just for financial aspects of it, but caring for loved ones that may need care after you're gone, or even during the time you're still living, but you may not be able to care for them, Larry.
That's right. Sure.
Phenomenal.
It's fantastic stuff, and I want to say we still have time.
Yes.
For you, our KXXT listener, to call in, speak with attorney Keith Lineman. The price is right. He's an esteemed expert in the area of estate planning, in the area of elder law planning. And if you have a question, you have a situation, you're not sure, we have one of the Valley's experts right here behind the microphone, so give us a call, 602-296-3632. The number again, 602-296-3632. You know, guys, we were talking during the break, and we were talking, we just before the break, we were discussing sort of reactions to the topic of long-term care insurance. And that happens to be an area I do a great deal of work in. It's central to financial planning and to crisis avoidance. And I had mentioned some of the things that I had heard over my years when the issue of long-term care insurance came up. And we were talking in the break, and let's all feel free to chime in on this topic about why there has been in the past such a distaste, such a dislike for this idea of long-term care insurance. And it's kind of funny in a way, because I think the primary reason most people have not liked the older versions of long-term care insurance is because it's a use-it-or-lose-it prospect. If you don't get chronically ill at the end of the year, the feeling is I've wasted my money. And it's funny. Long-term care insurance seems to be one of the only types of insurance that people do that with. I have never seen anyone on New Year's Eve kicking themselves in the butt saying, geez, my house didn't catch on fire this year, and I paid for that fire insurance, and what a waste. Or, I didn't have a wreck in my car, I'm such an idiot, I wasted my money, but people don't do that.
And yeah, but Larry, look at the cost. I think a lot of it is the differential between the cost of you know, say, fire insurance, mm-hmm. or that, versus the cost of long-term care insurance. Now, you know the numbers way better than I do, but I know roughly around age 50, 55 or so, it mm-hmm. increases exponentially.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they're so focused on the fact that if they don't use it, they lose it.
Well, I think that's an emotionally fueled reaction, Keith. And I say that because you brought up the cost of long-term care insurance, and you're right. The gradient after about age 60 or so really gets steep year over year. But so does the statistical probability of a long-term care event. And look at what the cost is there. With an average claim running maybe 2.5-3 years, in Arizona, there are many different kinds of services, and they cover a wide spectrum. But it's not; it wouldn't be unreasonable or unusual to spend $70,000 on a long-term care claim, and so 3 years of that, $210,000, compared to the cost of a long-term care policy. In hindsight, and that's the key, always looks very reasonable. A few thousand dollars to avoid a $210,000 bill, that's very reasonable. But lo and behold, what I wanted to bring up is, and I'm finding many people don't know about these options. Over the last, I would say, maybe 15 years, there has been an outburst of really productive activity and creative activity on the part of insurance carriers where they have addressed this issue of use it or lose it. And they have come up with a whole new brand of long-term care products that essentially, they sit on either a life insurance chassis or an annuity chassis. But what I really like about them is the fact, and what consumers I see really like about them, is the fact that they aren't use it or lose it in a sense, because with these programs, someone at some time, under some set of circumstances, will be contractually guaranteed to get more money out of that policy than went into it. And that's critical. And I have found that that sort of emotional stop sign that comes up when we begin to discuss insurance as a way to plan for long-term care, that stop sign doesn't come up quite so readily. And then some of the programs, too, offer a contractual guarantee that says, you know what, if you change your mind about this any time between the time you take it out and any time in the future, we'll just give you all your money back. That's a contractual guarantee. It's not a question. It's a contract. And all you have to do is ask for it, and they'll give it back to you.
Now, did you mention this time or last time when you talked about that program that you don't even need a medical exam? Is that what
some programs, it's interesting what they've done. Some of the carriers have become really creative and innovative with this. And when we use those kinds of programs, you don't need a medical exam for most people most of the time. They give you a list of what they call knockout questions. And if you can answer no to these, let's say, 12 questions, no, I don't have cancer, no, I don't have a terminal illness or something very serious, all you do is we sit around my conference table and we have a little speakerphone and we pass it back and forth. We call them, we give them the information, and if you can answer correctly to those knockout questions, they approve the policy right then and there over the phone. And it's done. Mm-hmm. And you send in the money, no physical exams, no blood, no urine, and they've really streamlined it, and then add to it the guarantees of somebody getting the money back. I have clients that'll just put lump sums in there. Those lump sums earn sometimes very attractive interest rates, and they can actually access those monies. If it sits on a life insurance chassis and the individual never uses it for long-term care and they die, what happens? It creates a leveraged tax-free bequest to somebody. So they're very potent programs. They just go down a whole lot easier than some of the old traditional chassis of use it or lose it.
Amazing.
Interesting stuff. Good.
Larry, you know, the other thing about those kind of policies that people need to be aware of is that when you look at ways to private pay, you know, for your long-term care with the supplement of the insurance availability to supplement your own income and resources, you're going to have, in most cases, a much higher quality of care, an environment that's mm-hmm. a much higher quality.
Good point.
A lot of people will come to our office and talk about Medicaid planning, which we do. But the end result of Medicaid planning is the idea that they will someday be on Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay to a point, but as we all know, the cutbacks in Medicaid have been substantial. There's basically a private, not a private pay, but a rate of pay that the care providers, program contractors pay to nursing homes and other facilities, which is about a third or less than what the private pay rate is. So let's say you own a facility and you have so many beds and you charge $3,500 a month. If you accept an Altex patient, a Medicaid patient, then you will only be receiving maybe $1,200 for that
same
bed.
That's a big spread. That's a very big spread.
And so as a result of that, a lot of facilities no longer take Medicaid patients because they're losing money. So the quality or the choices for quality care are drastically reduced from what they were a few years ago. So if they can focus on getting affordable care through supplement of some kind of long-term care policy, their ultimate end result is going to be much better because the quality of care is going to be better. They're going to have much more in the way of choices.
That's a great point.
Well,
great point.
Let me ask both of you. I think we only have about 4 minutes left. However, will the demand for these skilled nursing facilities or private homes outweigh the supply because of the baby boomer generation? Have any either one of you heard anything with regard to that? Is there enough supply?
I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I would imagine that if the demand is there and there isn't enough supply will catch up to it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I have wondered. One of the thoughts I had just jotted down was of our vision of the future. Where will we go with things like long-term care? Where will we actually stand 15 years from now with programs like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? And I'll tell you one thing just on that question, and we can in our last minute or two go where we would like. I believe it's my feeling that the innovation that we will look forward to in the next decade won't be just replication of the technology we have. I think it's going to be technology-based. And maybe we will find more and more home care, because of technological advances, becoming reasonable, viable ways to provide safe, good quality care in the absence of being in a brick-and-mortar type of facility. You know, imagine if you were at home, but there was some kind of a video arrangement or, I mean, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud here, of ways to watch after someone who needs some care, to alert someone through some technology that they've fallen, that they need something. And so I think it will not only be more bricks and mortar, I think it will be technological advances that we'll see.
I also think that, you know, we're fortunate to be living in Arizona because the Arizona Access Medicaid program is one that automatically entitles a beneficiary who qualifies to receive care in the home. They can receive, you know, caregiving, all kinds of provision of services within the home. Most other states, that is actually what's called a waiver program. Most other Medicaid states do not provide for care or payment for care within the home. They only pay outside the home unless you're on a waiting list. So Medicaid here does focus on in-home care, and so that would tie in again with what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, let's give out some contact information.
Yes.
Attorney Keith Langman, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm available. We have a website. It's www.frgalaw.com. And our phone number is area code 602-277-2010.
Excellent. Larry, how about you?
I can be reached through my website, Dave. That address is riiadvisors.com, and that's advisors with an O, not an E, riiadvisors.com. Our office may be called at 480-556-7033.
Wow. Well, Keith Lyman, thank you so much for coming in today.
You.
And Larry, always a pleasure seeing you. We'll see you
Likewise. Next
month for some more of Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crisis. Stay tuned for the Standard of Excellence show coming right up at 3. Special guest, Justin Heggie. You're going to like that. It's all about relationships and how to keep it together. Be back in 2.
Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.